This is it. Not yet. 2 minutes here. Okay, the sun often has a deleterious effect on Talmud Torah. Only question is, when does the summer start? But tomorrow is going to be a very hot day, so I think tomorrow is definitely the summer. And I'm just saying that because I heard that on the news. I mean, I don't know anything about the weather. Okay, the story of Korach is a strange story from beginning to end. And it's hard to determine which part of the strange story you should concentrate on. Which is like, I mean, in general, Bigadol, as they like to say in Israel, it's just the very idea that somebody would challenge the leadership of Moshe Rabbeinu at this particular time is itself difficult for us to understand. But of course, we might explain that as being connected to the fact that Am Yisrael was entering into a period of punishment, and that they would be in the desert 38 years, which might mean that Moshe Rabbeinu's promise to lead them to Eretz Yisrael was not going to be fulfilled. If that's the case, maybe Moshe Rabbeinu is no longer the all-powerful leader that he was. And so Korach and his cohort can make this rather remarkable claim that we were all there at Har Sinai. But everybody knows that that's not true. That Am Yisrael was there at Har Sinai, but Moshe Rabbeinu was on top of the mountain and they were at the bottom of the mountain. I mean, how could anybody make a mistake about that? So that the very fact that he did it, Korach did it, is something that deserves our attention. But beyond that, the process of punishment is extremely complicated. And that's what I want to look at a little bit tonight. I mean, HaKadosh Baruch Hu could have just wiped out the perpetrators, could have just killed them all at the same time, and had to have this very complicated way of doing, of punishing Korach v'Adato. Now, if you look at the sheet, just let's go through the psukim a little bit. So, you know, I'm sorry. This is about after... there was some kind of story about machtot. A machta is a censer, or what you'd call a ya'eh. A ya'eh is what you use to clean the floor with. Like, there's a broom, and there's a ya'eh. So you sweep into the ya'eh, and then you throw it into the garbage. I'm looking at the women because I'm sure they know about this. What? A dustbin, but I just thought you were word in Hebrew. Ya'eh. If you go to your local tambour and ask for a ya'eh, you're going to get a scream in return. I mean, you have to ask for the right thing. So anyway, a censer is like a ya'eh. Sometimes it has a cover on it, and sometimes it doesn't have a cover on it. What they did with this censer was that they took the spices, they took some fire, and they took the spices, and when the fire and the spices mixed together, it made smoke and smell. It made a smell, and this smell was put on the Mizbeach HaZahav. The Mizbeach HaZahav was in the Kodesh. Like you went from the outside hall into the inside hall, there you saw Mizbeach HaZahav, a golden Mizbeach. So all of the people who were involved with Korach were told to take a censer, to fill it with a ketoret, to walk around in a special place. And then there was Aaron HaKohen, he had his machta, and they had their machta, and then a fire came down from heaven and whacked them all 250 of them. No, you know, the ones who were with Korach. Then, so you have this scene that's described in the Torah of everybody lying there dead. And all of these machtot also lying there. They were smoking away. Right? So you have the dead people, and you have machtot. So then the Torah says this, right? Ve'ba Hashem Moshe l'mor, emor el Elazar ben Aharon HaKohen. Elazar is Aaron's third son. Nadav v'Avihu, unfortunately they were already dead because they did something similar. They brought an Esh Zara to the Mishkan, an Esh Zara. An Esh Zara means an unwarranted Ketoret. Not that there's anything wrong with the Ketoret per se, but they brought it at the wrong time. It had nothing to do with the Avodah that was necessary. So they were dead. Nadav v'Avihu. So Aaron, so Moshe says, tell Elazar, v'yarem et ha-machtot mibein ha-sreifa, v'eta esrei hala ki kadeshu. Well, let's start from the last words. Kadeshu, ki kadeshu. What does ki kadeshu mean? They have been designated. That's what Kedusha means. It doesn't mean a general word for sanctity. It means a specific word. I mean, they were designated for Avodah in the Mishkan. Right? We're talking about the Mishkan. So we have a problem. That's what the Chumash means. We have a problem. What's the problem? Well, what should we do with them? Can't just let them lie there. You can't give them back to the tambur, but you have all of these machtot which were designated to be used for the Mishkan. So you have to do something with them. So Rashi says, you see Rashi? Ki kadeshu. You see the second line in the Rashi. Hamachtot are kadeshu. They've been designated, right? I say the word designated. Vasurim b'hana'ah. And since they were designated to be used in the Mishkan, asurim b'hana'ah. What does asurim b'hana'ah mean? Always, asurim b'hana'ah means you can't make profit. You can't sell them, you can't use them for some other purpose, you can't do, that's what asur b'hana'ah means. Even though asur b'hana'ah in a general sense means you can't have any benefit from it. But we're talking about financial benefit. You can't sell them. You can't make them into anything. You can't use them for something else. All of that is called asur b'hana'ah. Sharei is Rashi. Sharei asa'un kli sharet, or klei sharet, which means they were designated. In other words, a machta is not a unique animal. It's not something you look at it, you know that it's from the Mishkan. But a machta is a machta. But in the world, there are machtot that have been designated for use in the Beit HaMikdash. Once the machta is designated for use in the Beit HaMikdash, you can't use it for anything else. So here you have all these machtot lying around on the ground, right? So you have to get them. You have to do something with them. That's what Rashi is trying to help us to understand. Why the Torah was concerned about these machtot. Okay? Et ha-machtot ha-chataim ha-ilu, pinafshotam, rasu otam, he says, take these machtot ha-chataim ha-ilu. Like even though the machtot are kedoshim, they are also the machtot of the chataim. So you have a dilemma.
There's a real dilemma. On the one hand, they're designated for use in the Mishkan. On the other hand, they were used for some terrible thing, for this machloket with the Korach. So what are you going to do? He says, "Vasu otam rikuei pachim sipui lamizbeach." Rikuei pachim sipui lamizbeach. So rikuei pachim means you beat them into a flat kind of sheet, right? These machtot, as we've learned previously, I'm sorry, it doesn't say it here, but it says the machtot were made of nechoshet. Nechoshet is generally understood as being copper. Copper is something that generally, like real copper, you see copper has a reddish color to it, right? A bright red or a dark red. There are different kinds of mixtures of things, but that's copper. So they take the machtot and beat them into sheets. Sipui la mizbeach. Sipui la mizbeach. Let them cover up the mizbeach. Now, what mizbeach are we talking about? There were two mizbechot in the Mishkan / Mikdash, right? One on the inside and one on the outside. The one on the inside is called Zahav, and the one on the outside is called Nechoshet. In other words, there was the golden altar and there was the copper altar. Why was the golden altar called the golden altar? Because it was covered by sheets of gold. It wasn't made out of gold. You can't make anything out of gold if you wanted to stand up. You have to figure out a way. So what they had was a frame, this mizbeach, and that frame was covered by gold. Now we know that, that's for sure. Now what about the mizbeach nechoshet? Which mizbeach is that? What? It's also called, it has many names. One of the names is Mizbeach HaOlah. Because twice a day, every day, they brought the Korban Tamid, which was a Korban Olah. Besides the Korban Olah, all the Chataim, the Korbanot Chatat, and all the Ashamim are also the Korbanot that you brought because you blamed of something. That's what there is a Chatat and Asham is not clear to me. But Chatat and Asham, all these Korbanot, which are about animals being sacrificed, right, in fire, were done on that Mizbeach. Now the animals were not killed on the Mizbeach. They were slaughtered below the Mizbeach. There were these rings that were put into the ground where the animal was held in place, and then they were able to do Shechita on that animal. Then they took they dissected it a little bit, they took the parts that were supposed to be burned up to the top of the Mizbeach. The Kohanim walked on a ramp to the top of the Mizbeach. Now the Mishnah concludes that the area of the Mizbeach at the top was 32 Amma by 32 Amma, which is very big. If this is an Amma, this is an Amma. Not if this is an Amma. So it's about a foot. Right, an Amma is about a foot. Let's say, you know, without arguing about what it is more precisely. So 32 feet by 32 feet is not small. It's not a small area, so that the Kohanim were running around on top of the Mizbeach. Some of them were taking care of the fire, and some of them were cleaning up stuff, and some of them were bringing the animal parts that had to be burnt on the Mizbeach. Now that Mizbeach, that big, tremendous Mizbeach, 32 feet by 32 feet at the top, it was wider at the bottom than it is at the top. It was built like a Lego. It was like, there's first this, and then a step in, then that, and another step in, and then that, right? So there were three steps in this Mizbeach. Three steps, and the highest step was 32 Amma by 32 Amma, which is quite big. There were also two ramps. There was like a direct ramp, they call that express. And then it was local. There was another ramp where you had to go in two directions, like you walked up the ramp, like you're walking away from the Mizbeach, and then suddenly the ramp turns around and you're walking towards the Mizbeach. Right, so those are two ramps that go up to the Mizbeach. So in any event, what does it say in this Pasuk? Like a lot of things are going on here. First of all, how come? What do you mean you put? Was this a new idea to put the Nechoshet on the Mizbeach? No, the Mizbeach was already built at the end of the book of Shmot. The Mishkan was built. We're in Bamidbar. Okay, Vayikra. There's very little time passes in Vayikra. But now in Bamidbar, there's a Mishkan, isn't there? I mean, there's a place where they do Avodat Hashem, and so there's a Mizbeach. Along comes the Torah and says, you know what you should do with the Machtot of Korach Va'adato? Beat them into sheets and put them on the Mizbeach, to make it into a Mizbeach Nechoshet. So if the Mizbeach was supposed to be Nechoshet, why didn't Moshe Rabbeinu make it that way? And if he did make it that way, then what is this all about? Why does it say, you know, so in any event, Rashi doesn't help us. If you look at Rashi, we said, Sipui l'mizbeach, that's the sixth line in the Rashi column, l'mizbeach ha'nechoshet. So I said, okay, I know it's for the mizbeach, why did they call it the mizbeach nechoshet? Wasn't it already covered with nechoshet? I mean, that's my question. Okay, v'yilaot, and then every time they look at the mizbeach, they're going to see the copper on the mizbeach, and they're going to say, Kapur Korach, right? That's called Zikaron. Sheyomru, people will say, Eilu ha'ayu me'otam shenechleku halakuna v'mishrifu. This is about, we remember the fact that in the face-off between Aaron HaKohen and Korach Va'adato, Aaron HaKohen won, and everybody else lost. So that's called Zikaron. Okay, Pasuk Dalet, Vayikach Elazar Kohen et Machtot HaNechoshet Asher Hakrivu HaSrufim VaYirakum Tzipu LeMizbeach. So he did it. Elazar Kohen, he took the Machtot, he beat them out, and then VaYirakum, that's beat them out, Tzipu LeMizbeach, and he made them a cover for the Mizbeach. Zikaron of Nei Yisrael, Aman Asher Yikrav Izzar, Asher Lomiter, Mizer Aaron, Who haktir ketoret lifnei Hashem lo yeh lekoch v'adato kashid v'Hashem b'yad Moshe lo. That means that like there were two fights going on. There was Korach against Moshe Rabbeinu, and then there were the Bnei Levi against Aaron. So that the punishment, the victory of Aaron, is represented by the machtot, and the machtot became tzipui l'mizbeach, and that's why according to this. That's why we call it Mizbeach Nechoshet, or because it was supposed to be a Mizbeach Nechoshet that happened, like God said, we'll see, that the Tzivui, to make a Mizbeach Nechoshet, took place much earlier. But that's what the Pasuk says. I don't know about the rest, that's for a different shiur. This is enough for us. Kashedibeh Hashem b'yad Moshe lo. You see the last of that pasuk, hey? The end of pasuk, hey? Pasuk A says, if we try to translate it, Kashedibeh Hashem b'yad Moshe lo. So okay, you know, it's like Hebrew. The worst thing is when you understand all the words and you still don't understand what it says. Then you're really in trouble because you can't look at any. Where are you going to look? The dictionary won't help you. So what does it say? Kasher did Hashem biyad Moshe lo. So we would be happy if the lo would be excised. What is lo? To whom? To him. So Rashi says this. Kasher did Hashem biyad Moshe. You see pasuk hey in the Rashi. Kmo alav. That lo, Rashi says, is like. These little prepositions in Hebrew are very difficult to define. And because they don't always seem to have a precise meaning, but they have a a syntactical spot. You know, it's like, when the sentence is this kind of sentence, so you'll have this kind of preposition. Which is a way of saying, like a very complicated way of saying, I don't understand what the preposition is doing there. I mean, I don't know if you're following me, but I used to like grammar a lot, till I found out. Then I didn't like it so much. Kasher diber Hashem biyad Moshe lo, kemo alav, Rashi says, about to him, or about him. Al-Aaron diber el Moshe, that God spoke to Moshe about Aaron. Sheyehu banav kohanim, that he and his son should be called, he, Aaron, and his sons would be kohanim. V'lefikach lo yikrav ish zar, asher lo mizer Aaron. And it was this idea, according to Rashi, that some people are in and some people are out. The people who are in can do sacrifices, for example. The people who are out, that's most of us, are zar. It took a lot of effort to get B'nai Yisrael to understand that this, in fact, is how it would always be. So he says, V'chein kol li v'lo v'lahem hasmulchim eitzel dibur pitronam kimo al. And therefore, the use of these little words, right? V'chein kol li, wherever you find the word li in the pasuk, or the word lo, or the word lahem, we call them pronouns. We call them pronouns, and they're often unnecessary. We know who they're talking about. We don't need the pronouns. Smuchim etzal dibur, that come after the verb dalet bet resh, right? Smuchim, that means they're leaning on or connected to a verb. Dalet bet resh, it means to speak, right? Dibur pitronam kimo al. They always mean about, the word about. So again, how does it explain the pasuk? Tashay dibe Hashem biyad Moshe al Aharon. Instead of saying al Aharon, the pasuk says lo. But if it was about a group of people, it could have said lahem. Lo lahem. That's what Rashi explains. Umedrasho. You know what that means? In the words of the Chasdei David, in the words of the Chasdei David, they wrote a very important Perush on Rashi that's called, what? Look, Shalom Yaakov doesn't remember, why should I remember? The Chasdei David was Rav David Fardu, and he wrote a famous Perush on the Tosefta called the Chasdei David. But he also wrote a Perush on Rashi. In that Perush of Rashi, he adopts the position, he lived hundreds of years ago, he adopts the position that when Rashi gives two Perushim, giving two different Perushim, he's not satisfied with either. Now that was a position that was adopted by Nechama Leibowitz when she taught Rashi. But of course, it could be wrong. Just because the Chasdei David said it and the Chaim Leibowitz liked it, doesn't mean it's right. Another possibility is that Rashi thought that both Perushim were correct. Why say that he thought that both Perushim were incorrect? Why not say he thought that both Perushim were correct? Sounds to me like a more, like a happier position. So generally, I have that position. What? Masculine David. Not his son. Masculine David. Thank you very much. You can always count on Shalom Yaakov. Masculine David, it's called. You can buy it in the store. It's been reprinted. It's an outstanding commentary on Rashi, because David Fardu was a tremendous Talmud Chacham, which seems to be always helpful in these kinds of projects. But here, I beg, the Masculine David might be correct. Because look, what does Rashi say? Umedrasho al Korach. Medrasho al Korach. When he says Umedrasho, Rashi means that even though I, Rashi, am committed to Pshat, right? Rashi says that many times in his commentary on the Torah.
in the parashiyot, the Bereishit and Noach. He says, I am committed to Pshat. And what Pshat is, according to Rashi, is usually a reasonable rendition of the words in order. Like you read the words, and it should make sense. But sometimes, Rashi says, the words as they are written don't make simple sense. And I have to resort to Medrasho. Medrasho is something that makes sense, like Bigadol. When you're not looking at the pasuk too carefully, makes sense. When you look at the pasuk, where does it come from? So what's a Medrasho in this case? Medrasho al Korach. That the pasuk, these words, Kasheh b'ber Hashem b'yad Moshe, lo means about Korach. But Korach is already dead. At least, in other words, according to the Midrash, it would be reasonable that you have this strange structure to tell you a reference to Korach. The reason it's not Pshat is because no one's talking about Korach anymore. People are talking about the aftermath of the punishment and the Ketoret. So that's what Rashi says. Umar b'yad Moshe. So how come the Pasuk says the words b'yad Moshe, the hand of Moshe, and not El Moshe, Remez? And Remez is another word that Chazal used for a kind of interpretation. It's like this Pshat. We definitely don't know what that means. But it seems to be closer to the text than Remez. And even closer, the Remez is even closer than Drash. In other words, Pshat, anybody can make up a Pshat. But a Drash, you can't. The drash is only what the Chachamim told us. And the remez is similar. Pshat is easy. Pshat, everybody can go. You go make up your own pshat all the time. That's called being modern. But the Ramban, for example, thought that that was an irrelevancy unless you could connect it to a tradition of interpretation, even if that tradition of interpretation was the Kabbalah. Remez lechotim ala kuna shelokim b'tzorah. How so? K'moshe lakam Moshe b'yado sh'nema. What do you think that is? That's obviously not pshat. It was Rashi says, Kasher d'vei Hashem b'yad means he reminded him about the yad that turned into a leprous arm when Moshe Rabbeinu was there with Paro. Like, why? Why is that? So why does that all make sense? Because then Moshe Rabbeinu has content. And the content is Shlecholkim ala kuna, Shlecholkim etzarat. And that's what Rashi's interest was. Rashi's interest was giving content. But since, if you say that it was Korach, there's no real content, because the whole thing is about Korach. So we have to go to the Medrash to construe a content that fits with this pasuk, even though it's far from obvious. But as far as Rashi's concerned, better to have far from obvious content than have no content. You see, you have to understand that Rashi didn't question Chazal. When Chazal said, B'yad Moshe means it was about Moshe's arm, that's what Chazal said. Rashi didn't say, didn't have any trouble. He believed them. It was not a... didn't call on his faith or his theological positions. Rashi believed everything Chazal said. That was obvious. What was Rashi's question? What issue did Rashi deal with? His issue was Pshat. That was his issue. And one of his limitations when he dealt with Pshat was that he wanted the Torah to mean something. He wanted meaning to come out of it. So if you read the Pasuk and there's not much meaning, so Rashi didn't like that. And if he couldn't give it more meaning, so he looked to Chazal. And when he looked to Chazal, he said, look, I believe Chazal are right. But that doesn't mean that Chazal are pshat. But I'll quote them in order to give meaning to the Pasuk, because it's important for the people who are learning Torah to know that the Pasuk has some meaning. I hope this all wasn't too annoying and complicated. In any event, that's what Rashi says, that the pasuk says. And then there's a story about how this actually happened, and there was a magefa, etc. Okay, so now if I ask you,
I ask you, what was the problem? I mean, there are two things here in Rashi, but let's go back to the first. The first is, what were the machtot? What was the classification, the din of the machtot? So Rashi says, ki kadeshu ha-machtot v'asurim b'hana'a sh'arei asa'um kli sh'areit. Right? Three definitions. But one is, Rashi says, asurim b'hana'a. No, two definitions. Asurim b'hana'a, which means I told you that you can't derive any financial benefit from them. You can't sell them, you can't use them, you can't use them for some other purpose. You can't use them to clean the house. Those are the machtot. And the second thing he says is, sh'arei asa'um kli sharet. That Moshe Rabbeinu made them part of the kelim of the Beit HaMikdash, and that seems odd to us. What do you mean, when he made them the kelim of the Beit HaMikdash? God told him that everybody should take a machta, and they were outside of the Mishkan. When I say Beit HaMikdash, I get mixed up, but I mean the Mishkan, the tabernacle. So they were outside. They weren't doing service in the Mishkan. Who said that they were kli sharet? How did Rashi know this? Now the commentary that brings this up is the Ramban. And the Ramban says this. You see the Ramban at the bottom of the page? Ki kadeshu ha-machtot ve'im asurim ba'ana'a shekvar asa'um kli sharet lishon Rashi. Right? Quote of Rashi. Lo yadati ta'am li surazim. He says, I don't get it. The Ramban. The Ramban says he doesn't get it. It means you don't get it either. Right? That's how it works. That's how it works. So he says, Lo yadati ta'am li sur hazeh. Shai katoret zara hikrivu. After all, what did they sacrifice? What was their sacrifice? They took a machta. They put fire on it. They put these samim, spices on it. They made a lot of smoke. But they didn't go into the Mishkan. They didn't do anything. They just stood there. And they were punished for being involved in this test. Sharek Torah Zarah Hikrivu. Vizar Shasak Li Sharek Lakriv Bachutz Beisur Eino Mikudash. He says, everybody knows this halacha. Like if you don't know the halacha, you can imagine that it is true. That if a person decides that he's going to be like a Kohen, and he's going to take a machta, and he's going to put the spices on it, and the fire, and he's going to do it bachutz, he's going to do what the Kohen does inside, he's going to do it outside, eino mikudash. So we have to worry, so then you take his yaher, you take his censer, and you could use it for cleaning the house afterwards. I mean, he did something wrong, but it's not a klisha, right? Avo yesh lomar. This is the Ramban. So the Ramban is really the one. Rashi is helpful because Rashi says that there was a real problem that had to be solved. The real problem was Kadosh. What am I going to do with the Kadosh? I can't really use it in the Mishkan. I got to do something with it. But the Ramban says, not Kadosh. What's all this stuff about beating it out and making it a cover for the Mizbeach? So the Ramban says, Avol Yesh Lomar. Ki ba'avur she'asu kein al pi Moshe haya kadosh. What do you think? Not bad. In other words, if Moshe would have told them to make kli sharet, that it certainly would have been a kli sharet. But he didn't. He just told them to make machtot, to bring machtot, like the machtot, you know, to go to the tambour and buy machtot. So they did that. But since they did it according to the command of Moshe Rabbeinu, this is the Ramban's idea, they did it according to the command of Moshe Rabbeinu, it became Kadosh. Right? It became, that's what he says. So it became Moshe Hayu Kadosh. Ki hei mikdishu otam l'shamayim. Because after all, the people who had these machtot, they were hoping that heaven would respond to them. So even though they were bad people because they were fighting with Aaron HaKohen about superiority of some sort, but they really were hoping that God would turn his favor upon them and that they would be the ones who would be successful. Ki ba'avu she'asu kein al-pi Moshe hayu kadosh, ki hei mikdishu otam l'shamayim, v'fich chechashvu she'aneh otam elokim ve'esh, v'tiyena machnot eilu kli, sharet ba'omu eid la'olam. And they thought that after God, that if God would answer them, and the fire would come down from heaven and consume the spices on their machtot, that of course everybody agreed that those machtot should be designated for the Mishkan. So their hope was that they would end up as Kli Sharet. In order to end up as a Kli Sharet, you have to start out as a Kli Sharet. In other words, you have to say, this is designated. This is designated for the Mishkan. Right? That's called Kli Sharet. And then he says, Ki Yomar Katuv, Ki Yikrivum, Lefnei Hashem, Ki Yatshu, V'yu La'ot, Lefnei Yisrael Klomar, Ani Higdashti Otav, Mei Chekrivu Otav, Lefanai, Kidei Shiyu La'ot, Lefnei Yisrael. So the Ramban, it comes exactly the same conclusion as Rashi, that these Kelim were somehow imbued with Kedusha, and therefore they had to be dealt with. However, what Rashi takes as being self-evident or obvious that they were Kli Sharet, the Ramban says in a more complicated way. They were Kli Sharet because the people involved, Moshe Rabbeinu and the people who were holding these machtot, wanted them to be Kli Sharet, and that's how they designated them to start with. And somehow this goes back to Moshe Rabbeinu, who was really the designator in these matters. Moshe Rabbeinu was able to tell everybody tell everybody there was a Kli Sharet. Okay. So I want to just, before we go on, we have a few more things to do, as you can see. All right, let's go on. Hey, what can I do? I've got to go on. In Shemot Perek Zayin, which is like a volume that I did not bring. Vasita et ha-mizbeach ha-chtzei shittim, chamesh ha-mot orech, chamesh ha-mot rochav, ravu ha-yah mizbeach, shalosh ha-mot komato. Vasita karnotav, olabai pinotav, mimeno tiyena karnotav, tzipita oto nechoshet. Here, the pasuk says that when you built the mizbeach, when we talk about the big mizbeach, when you built that big mizbeach, it had four turrets. I think they're called turrets. Like four little protrusions in each corner, which were hollow. You know, like you could put the takim in there, asking for the good wishes for someone or other. So there were four turrets. These turrets, the pasuk says, were covered with nechoshet. They're covered in nechoshet. Vasita sirotav ledashno, v'yaav mizrikotav, etc., v'choshet. All the kelim, all the small vessels that are connected to the mizbeach, this big mizbeach, were made of nechoshet. Vasita lo mechbar ma'asereshet nechoshet, and there was another, like, if I had to describe it without looking at a picture, it was like a kamaban. You know what a kamaban is? Was that out of, a lot out of date, from a different world? What? Yeah, sometimes you have a tuxedo, they have these kind of things that cover up your belt, called a kamaban, so you imagine everybody's perfectly fitted. What? That's a kamaban, right? So the mizbeach had something like that, around the middle of it, which actually separated the top from the bottom, because when they had Zrikat Adam, when they did throwing the blood at the Mizbeach, a certain korbanot, some korbanot, the blood had to be in the upper part of the Mizbeach, and some korbanot, the blood had to be in the lower part of the Mizbeach. So this kamaban, right, going around, was a sign to the Kohanim of where the Zrikat Adam in the Mizbeach should be. And that's called a mechbar. That's called a mechbar. And then there's a karkov. And then it says again, pasuk vav, vasita badim la mizbeach, badei atzei shitim, vitzipita otom nechoshet. So here's more nechoshet. So we have the turrets are covered with nechoshet. Now we have badim. Badim are poles. Right, the Mizbeach had holes in it, had hooks, like hooks or... you know, you could put the badim in through the hooks and then pick it up. Of course, it's not so easy to understand how they picked up the Mizbeach, but I'll tell you that in a moment. So the vuv lachot is a problem. A luach is a plate. A luach is a plate. Now, according to the Gemara, the way they made it was they traveled during the 38 years in the desert. Right? So in order to travel, they had to move the Mishkan. The biggest thing in the Mishkan was the Mizbeach. Now, how did they move it? How did they move the Mizbeach? Well, you have to think of how they made it. The way they made the Mizbeach was that they had a frame that was 34 by 34. Like when they build today. If you see people build, so they make frames and they fill in the frame with cement. That's how they do it. With the Mizbeach, they had a frame and they filled it in with rocks and dirt and seed and whitewash. You know, whatever they could find around, they filled it in. And then they put another frame on that, which is a little bit smaller than the first frame, and they filled that in with rocks and dirt and a whitewash. And then add a third frame, and they filled it in again, and that's how they built the Mizbeach. But the important thing about building the Mizbeach in that way was they could unbuild it. If it was cement, they wouldn't be able to take it apart. They'd have to smash it somehow to take it apart. But since there was nothing, there was no cement in this structure, where they had to move, all they did was take out all the dirt, take off the frame number one from the top, then take out more dirt, and take off frame number two, and so they ended up with three frames. Three frames representing the Mizbeach, that was the Mizbeach. And that they were able to carry. That they were able to carry on these poles, more or less. I mean, I'm not saying that I've solved this problem 100%, but that's more or less the way it went. So that there is Nechoshet. This is the Mizbeach that was built. This is the Mizbeach that was built in the Mishkan. It looks like, it's in the parish of the Mishkan. So that the Mizbeach and the Mishkan had the Nechoshet, but we're not sure how much Nechoshet it had. It had Nechoshet on the Badim, and had Nechoshet on the turrets, but we don't know if it had Nechoshet any place else. There's another Pasuk, right, Pasuk of Perikav, which is in Truma. It says, you see on the same page, the second reference is wrong, I'm sorry. I wanted it to be Perik Memchet. It turned out to be Perik Mem Hei. I guess that says something. Shmot Perik Kaf Pasuk Kaf Alev. It says in Mizbach Avanim Taseli, Lo Tirneh En Gazit. Gazit means hewn stones. Hewn stones are what we use here in Yerushalayim to build, usually. You take a stone and you give it a shape. Right? And then, even though all the stones come out of a quarry, at the end, they all look the same. That's gazit. You take a chisel, a hammer, something of steel, something harder than the stone, which is not, a lot of things harder than the stones. The stones are made out of sand. I mean, ultimately, they're made out of sand. So that when you build something, first you have to make the stones hewn stones, usually. But here the Pasuk says, Imizbach HaVanim Ta'aseh Li, Lo tivne etem gazit. Don't use hewn stones. Ki chabachai naftaleh batachalaleh. Because you did it with a steel implement that's like a cherev, and that's no good for the korban. Now, which mizbeach are we talking about? Which is a mizbeach of stones? I just told you that the mizbeach that they made in the Mishkan in the desert was not made out of stones, really. It was made out of landfill. Like they put in the fill into the... So is that the Mizbeach? Was it also made out of stone? Anyway,
I don't want to go through the Rashi, it'll take us too long, but if you look at this pasuk that's on the sheet from Divrei Hayamim, you see Divrei Hayamim? It says, Vayas mizbach nechoshet, v'shrim amah arko, v'shrim amah rachbo, v'eser amot korato. That's Shlomo HaMelech. That pasuk refers to Shlomo HaMelech, the antecedent of Vayas, right? Who asa is Shlomo HaMelech. He made a Mizbach Nechoshet. In other words, if he made a Mizbach Nechoshet, then what do we say? What do we have to say? Even though as far as we know, what was Nechoshet in the Mishkan? The turrets and the Badim. And when did the Nechoshet come to the Mizbeach on the Mishkan? When did it come? After the Chet? After HaKorach Vadato. So if I would say, I'm Shlomo HaMelech, let's say, I'm trying to figure out how you have to build the Mizbeach in the Beit HaMikdash. Now what about the Badim? Well, no Badim. Right, Shlomo didn't have Badim on his, his Mizbeach, because they're not going to move it any place. How are they going to build it? Well, they'll probably build it out of name and cement. It'll be connected. That's why we say when we learn the parasha of Mizbeach, Mizbeach is always part of the furniture. It's part of the building, not part of the furniture. Right, you understand? The menorah, that's furniture. Why is the menorah furniture? Because you can move it from one place to another. Why is the shulchan furniture? Because you can move it from one place to another. Why is the Mizbeach building? Because it's built into the ground. You can't move it. Once Shlomo HaMelech made the Mizbeach, there's no way to move it. Nevertheless, Shlomo HaMelech made a decision that the Mizbeach should be a Mizbeach of Nechoshet. Mizbeach of Nechoshet. I just want to remind you of two other places that Nechoshet comes up. One place is here, Vayas Mizbach Nechoshet. No, that's Divrei Hayamim. Bamidbar Perikav Aleph, the Nachash HaNechoshet. Remember the story of the Nachash HaNechoshet? Vayishlach Hashem Nechashim. Again, Vayomer Hashem, Pasuk Chet. Vayomer Hashem LeMoshe, Say Lecha Tzara, Pesim Oto Al Nes. Vayakol Nashuch Ra'ah Oto V'Chai. So he would put a Nachash on a plate. Shlomo HaMelech, by Moshe Rabbeinu, he Moshe Rabbeinu put a nachash. All the people who were bitten by the snakes would look up at the nachash and they would be cured, right? That's the story. But believe me, it happened last year, this story. When we got to the it was in the Torah last year, even if you don't remember it. So he said, the Pasuk says, listen to what the Pasuk says. Asei lecha saraf, make a saraf, like a picture of a snake and put it on a flag or on a metal flag. Vayakol anashuch ra'ot alechai. Then the Lord comes, Pasuk Tet, Vayas Moshe Nechash Nechoshet. Nechoshet, what is Nechoshet? Copper. Moshe Rabbeinu made a snake on copper. Or he made a snake out of copper. So that you have to say one of two things. Either Moshe Rabbeinu looked around and the only thing he had lying around in the house was something copper, so he made his snake out of copper, or that he purposely made it out of copper. He could have made it out of cardboard, he could have made it out of oak bag, we used to say, oak bag. He made it out of copper. So what is Moshe Rabbeinu? What's Moshe Rabbeinu's relationship to copper? Well, the Mishkan. What was made out of copper in the Mishkan? Well, all of these small kelim that are connected to the Mizbeach and the Kiyar, yafeh. So the Mizbeach and the Kiyar. In fact, we can make a generalization. We are going to make a generalization. And not the Mizbeach. But the Mizbeach eventually was covered with copper. It wasn't made out of copper. But it was covered by copper. Because that's what happened after Korach. So that the outside of the Beis HaMikdash was the world of copper. And the inside of the Beis HaMikdash was the world of gold. The menorah, the shulchan, the mizbeach haktoret, all gold. Right? All gold.
The gold was not connected to the ground, all furniture. The Mizbeach, the Nechoshet, and the Kiyor, these tremendous kelim, were either made out of copper or covered with copper. Covered with copper, the Karnot HaMizbeach, the Badim, right, were covered with Karnot HaMizbeach, the Badim, which is something else, and the Mizbeach. And the Mizbeach, after Korach, after the Chait of Korach, the Mizbeach was also covered with copper. So that's the next source. We once talked about this at great length, and we don't have the time tonight, but you remember that, you have to remember that the kiyor, which is big, like it was where the Kohanim washed their hands and feet, remember, one hand, one foot, the water was in the kiyor. And the kiyor was made of, the pasuk says, nechoshet, and kano is nechoshet. In other words, the kiyor was like a tureen, like a soup tureen, which didn't have a flat bottom. And so if you put it down, it would fall over. But they put this tureen into a stand. That's called kano. So the tureen was made out of nechoshet, and the stand was made out of nechoshet. So that's all outside. They're all the outside part of the Beit HaMikdash, the Mizbeach, the Badim, the Karnot, the Kiyor, right? All of that is made, all that is made of fat, all the small kelim that go with the Beit with the Mizbeach, all of that is what do you call it? All of that is copper. All of that is copper. Now, before I tell you, I do want to tell you one thing that the Medrash says it's not written on the sheet. Somebody told me that once, that no matter how much material you give out to your students, you're a teacher. No matter how much material you give out, you have to save something as a surprise. Otherwise, you're on sort of even keel with the students, which is always a bad thing. So there's a Medrash in Medrash Rabbah. If you want to know where it is, I'll give you the source afterwards. Gracious Rabbah. Amar Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish was the last generation of Amoraim in Eretz Yisrael. The important thing is that he was in Eretz Yisrael. Lo haya ba'olam ra'ul lehishtamesh bizahav. Lo haya ba'olam ra'ul lehishtamesh bizahav. There was no one who was really appropriate for gold. Gold is out of the box somehow. Ve'lama nivra. So why did God create gold if no one's really worthy of the gold? Bishvil Beit HaMikdash. In order that the inside room in the Beit HaMikdash with the Shulchan and the Mizbeach HaKtoret and the Menorah should be able to be built of gold. So gold was created. Gold was created. That's interesting. Now, before we ask when was gold created exactly, I mean, what do you mean gold was created? Everything was created. What's gold? What is the Medrash referring to? Let's just look quickly at the Kli Yakar. The Kli Yakar, I can't tell you who the Kli Yakar is. You want to know? Google Kli Yakar. Vasita Shmot, Vasita Mizbeach Mukdash Ktoret, that's Eshitim, Tase Ota. The Mizbeach of the Ktoret was built with Atzei Shitim. What does Atzei Shitim mean? Just like they build here. It's like when you build a house. Because they had these planks, and they put the planks one up on the other, and then they could cover the planks with the gold. I mean, they had to build something. You couldn't just make it out of gold. So they made it out of wood, basically, and they covered it with the gold. And that's called, let's look at the Kli Yakar. Vivasita Mizbeach Mukdash Ktoret, about this command, Kfi HaNer'eh, it seems to me, but he says it seems, Sheshtei Mizbechot Eilu, Nerchu Shnehem Lechaper, Al HaNefesh HaChoteit.
that these two altars, the one of gold and the one of Nechoshet, were created in order to atone the soul of the sinner. Ki Mizbach HaNechoshet, he said, the copper Mizbach, the big Mizbach outside, Ba'al HaPer Al-Chalkei HaChomer V'Haguf HaNaguf Be'Evan HaChet. He says, that takes care of the goof, the outside Mizbach. How so? Alav Makrivim HaBa'alei Chayim, as somebody said here before, that all the animals are sacrificed on that big Mizbach. Chaba'im Tmurato. And after all, what is an animal sacrifice? According to the Kli Yakar, the Kli Yakar lived long after the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed. Nevertheless, he says, if you have to try to understand what an animal sacrifice is, he says, Haba'im Tmurato. In other words, instead of my body deserves to be punished for what I did. Instead of my body being punished, I said, I give korbanot, and that takes care of my body. Ki yesh lahem dinyom el chomer ha'adam. Because animals have arms and legs and heads, and so you can say the head is for the head, and the back is for the back, and the arms are for the arm, right? In other words, somehow this is kind of a parody, which people go for it, as evidenced by Shlogan Kaporis. You know about Shlogan Kaporis? Shlogan Kaporis, when I was a kid, I never even heard of it. You had to go to Africa to see some of Shlogan Kaporis. Today, it's embarrassing not to do it. You know, it's like you have to defend yourself. You say, oh, the Shulchan Aruch says you shouldn't do it. You say, oh, well, we did away with that all the time. No, but it's just odd. How things change without us noticing always. And suddenly we're in a different world. And even though we were certain that the world used to be just fine, all of a sudden no one else thinks so. Everybody thinks that you're crazy if you think that world was fine and you have to take the chicken and wrap it around your head. And you tell them that you never saw your Rebbe do it or you never saw his Rebbe do it, it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. They're just like an a priori assumption that if you don't do it, there's something wrong with you. So there's nothing you can say that vindicates yourself. Which is like a wonderful... If Israel could learn how to do that in their own public relations enterprise, so it would be really terrific. But fortunately, Israel tries to do it, but nobody believes them. So he says, Ki yesh lahem dimyon el chomer adam. Now, ותמונת המזבח יוכיח כי זאת קומתו דמתה לקומת אדם בינוני כמלאמות. He says, after all, the top part of the Mizbeach is Gimel Amot, and that's more or less the height of a person. I don't know where the measurements come from. וכן הבאמות הנקרבים דומים על נפש הבאמית שבאדם נפש תמורת נפש, כמיתם זה נאמר במלכת עוני, ונפש כתקיב. In other words, a person is like an animal in certain ways. But not only like an animal, because he says, אבל מכל מקום, I'm on the fifth wide line in the middle of the line. Fifth wide line in the middle of the line. So I got in the web yeshiva, I just make a mark. So it's much easier. But here I have to do the old style. Mikol makom, gam haneshama tzricha kapara. This is his ideology. So it's not only the body that does the aveira, but somehow the neshama, the soul, is compliant. Also does an aveira. Acharei asher yitamu b'gufa nagufa zeh. You can't say that the neshama is going to be atoned because you sacrificed an animal on the mizbeach. Ki ruach b'nei adam olah lemala, ruach habeima yoredet lemata. Ve'eich b'yeh nefesh habeima hakala v'nifsad tzmura neshad adam chayim v'netzach haken tziva el chay lasot mizbeach ketoret. So he has, I mean, it's, if you have time, you should take a look at this. He says this.
He says, why do you need two mizbechot in the Beit HaMikdash or in the Mishkan? Because we are really comprised, this is like not a new idea, but he says we're also comprised of, but it's still helpful, even though it's not new. We're comprised of two parts, you know, there's like, we have Yetzer Hara, and we have inclinations, and we have high and lofty thoughts. And somehow, his position is that the tava, that the inclinations that we have to do averis, and the averis that we do, there's a certain compliance of the spirit within us. It's not as though the spirit goes to sleep and doesn't participate, but according to the Kli Yakar, the spirit also plays a role. Therefore, atonement has to come to both parts of ourselves. And so there are two mizbechot. There are two mizbechot, one mizbech inside, one outside. Mizbech outside is kapara for the guf, for the perpetrator and the avera doer, and the mizbech on the inside, the golden mizbech, where you put the ketoret and the smell goes up to heaven, and the pasuk says at the beginning of Vayikra, beginning of Vayikra, Reach Nicholach Lashem, that somehow this finds favor in God's eyes, not the sacrifice of the animals, but the Reach Nicholach of the ketoret finds favor in God's eyes. So now, having said all of this, I'll tell you what I want to say. Where does the gold come from? Remember the gold? Isn't that what we asked? Like, one of the questions we asked, where's this gold? I mean, if the world is not really worthy of gold, so then why is there gold? In other words, we know that the world was not worthy of light. What happened to the light? So Chazal said that the light was taken away. And Olam Haba, the righteous will benefit from that light. So why isn't the same thing happen to Zahav if not worthy of Zahav? So I remind you then in Perek Beis it says this. Perek Bet Pasuk Yud. One of the Pasukim is on the sheet. For the Har Yotzei Me'Eden. There was a river that came from Eden. Eden, that's the place that Adam and Chava were supposed to be. What is it that designates Eden? Everything is right. Everything is as should be. They couldn't live there. They weren't able to put up with that kind of level of perfection. So Nahar Yotzei Me'Eden Lashkot Et Hagan U'Misham Yipared Vayal Arba Rashim. One river became four. We're talking about the Gan, the thing that makes us feel that there's perfection in the Gan. Is that there's an ongoing source of water that is never questioned. Not like Eretz Yisrael, where there's always a problem with water. But Gan Eden means that you always have the fruit or the trees and everything is growing, but in order to make sure that happens, you need water. So here's the water. Now how you'd say the Eden Ashkot to Dagan, Mishami Pared Me'ebal Hashim, Shem Echad Pishon, Who I saw David call Eretz Achavila, Hashasham HaZahav. Hashasham HaZahav. That's what the pasuk says. That this river called Pishon, would go around the land called Chavila, and that land was known as Hashasham HaZahav. In other words, in Gan Eden, there was a special place. It was a special place where everybody knew, Adam and Chava. They knew, Asher Sham HaZahav. V'Zahav HaAretz Ahi Tov. Zahav HaAretz Ahi Tov. What's Tov mean? Tov means created. It was designated again by God. That's what Tov is. Everything God did was Tov, meaning it was done. That this was part of the creation, Eksham Abdullah for Ibn Hashoam, other kinds of stones as well. So we see that after the Beit, after the Cheta Egel, many things in the world could no longer be reconciled. They couldn't be one. after the Chet HaEgel. Even though Chazal say in the Gemara in Shabbos that when Am Yisrael went to Har Sinai, they had atoned for the Chet of Adam HaRishon. They reached such a level of dedication that the Chet of Adam HaRishon wasn't their Chet anymore. However, they were not able to build the Beit HaMikdash. They were not able to build the Beit HaMikdash out of gold. Because if gold is for the Beit HaMikdash, as the Midrash says, then everything should be built out of gold. But after the Chet HaEgel, remember the Egel? The Egel was built out of gold. Gold was no longer able to provide Am Yisrael with the spiritual outlet that it should have. And so when HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Bnei Yisrael to build the Mishkan, HaKadosh Baruch Hu told them, gold is for the Mishkan, but not the whole Mishkan. The Mishkan will not be built after the Chet HaEgel, could not be built out of gold. So the division was that the inside Kelim were made out of gold, and the outside Kelim were made of Nechoshet, which is an indication that the Chet HaEgel changed things. Right? Because if we're always on our way, like the Ramban says, we're always trying to get back to Gan Eden. We're always trying to live a perfect life. So we almost had it, but the Chet HaEgel destroyed it. And we were no longer able to build, a Mishkan of Zahav. And that's why the emphasis with Shlomo HaMelech is that when Shlomo HaMelech built the Mizbeach, he built it out of Nechoshet. Because he knew that Shlomo HaMelech, who had wealth and power and authority, that even he could not build a Mizbeach out of gold. And so when the Chet of Korach took place, and there was a challenge to Aaron HaKohen. That challenge increased the Nechoshet. In other words, there's the Nechoshet on the turret, there were the Nechoshet on the Badim, but I mean, it's hard to put the Nechoshet on the Mizbeach. But Korach, the result of Korach, the Zikaron, that's what the Pasuk says, the memory of the Chet of Korach was that he turned the whole Mizbeach into a Mizbeach of Nechoshet. So we see that if Gan Eden is kind of I just want to say that the Kli Yochar fits in because the Kli Yochar saw our enterprise as being a divided one. We were the Guf and the Neshama, and we had to somehow take care of the Guf and take care of the Neshama. And that's really not the way it might have been. But after the Chet of Adam and Chava in Gan Eden, where they were kicked out of the place that had the Zahav, and after the Chet of Bnei Yisrael, the Chet HaEgel, which denied them the kind of unity that might have taken place in their own conceptions, HaKadosh Baruch Hu told them to build the Mishkan, gold inside and the Choshet on the other side, then along came the Chet of Korach, which was a Chet specifically having to do with the Mishkan and the future of worship, whether the Kohanim would be in charge or not. And so HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Zikaron, Ot, the sign, the memory, will be the Nechoshet that's on the Mizbeach. And then Shlomo HaMelech understood that as being the reality of things. And Shlomo HaMelech did not say, I'm going to do it the way I think it should have been done originally. But he said, we're the same people, and we carry the same burdens, and we have the same memory. And therefore, it's important for us that everything outside, that everybody sees, should be Nechoshet. And in fact, what he did was he added 10 Kiyorim. Right? You know, in his Chatzer, Shlomo HaMelech, there were 10 more Kiyorim that he built, and they were all made out of Nechoshet. Now, I think it's unnecessary for me to say, so I'll say it anyway, that there is a relationship between gold and copper. I'm not talking about chemistry, I'm just talking about looking at it. You sort of like copper, you might say the copper is gold that didn't make it. So it didn't quite get to be that beautiful or that pure or that clean. But it's like, it's not like other things, where other metals where the colors are dark and black and ugly. Copper is bright. I mean, the Marot HaTzavot, they use copper as mirrors. By the way, you're able to see your own reflection in the copper. So, in any event, there was a transgression. There was an Avera, and there is this matter of the Nechoshet, which we try to consider tonight. Have a good Shabbos. Marit, can we have Marit?
$5 or gold?